and it's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor. How are you people? Good morning, lurking conservatives. Good morning, Mark Riley. How are you?
Good morning, Mark Maron. What's going on?
I'm in Cincinnati, my friend.
Cincinnati.
I'm in Cincinnati, Ohio. I'm all by myself. I'm having abandonment issues. I'm here in a room. They're taking care of me. But, man, I'm like in a giant spaceship. A clear channel spaceship is where I am, Riley.
I'm down. Now, where are you going with it?
I don't know, man. I hope I'm going out over the air to our regular listeners. I also want to say good morning to Chicago, Illinois. We're back in Chi-Town on 850 AM, WCPT, Chicago's Progressive Talk. I, of course, am here in Cincinnati on 1530 WCKY.
Yeah.
The revolution of talk radio. I'm going to be at Go Bananas tonight for two shows, tomorrow night for two shows. You know, I got to tell you, I haven't done much in Cincinnati, but I was amazed at the size of the airport.
Really?
I got nothing to really report, but I really didn't think it was this big of a city. But I swear to God, we landed in Cleveland. It took me like 2 hours just to walk from my gate to get out to the curb. It was unbelievable. And then I get here. But to be honest with you, I did look into the Passman told me to look into the chili and spaghetti thing.
Oh, yeah. How was that?
And I didn't do it. I'm not going to do it. It's crazy. It's just like crappy chili on bad spaghetti. It's crazy.
Chili pasta?
Yeah, chili pasta. That's this big thing. That's Pashman's like, everyone's telling me about this chili spaghetti thing. And, of course, Pashman, that would be something he'd be obsessed with. That'd be the signature of the city. And I don't know. You know, everything's been going great. They're taking good care of me here. I got a little nervous because I'm getting a ride back from the airport, and I'm asking the dude who's giving me the ride. I'm saying, well, what's Cincinnati known for? And he says, well, losing sports teams and hating black people. That's what he said.
Oh, wow. Losing sports teams and hating. Not even Jerry Springer.
And I'm like, wow, that sounds great.
Wow.
Wow, what a city. But no, it's been great. They've been taking care of me here. I went to the Cincinnati McDonald's and had a Cincinnati filet of fish.
There's only one McDonald's in Cincinnati. Huh?
Oh, no, it's huge. Apparently, there's like a million people here.
Oh,
and it's,
okay.
You know, it's pretty beautiful, a downtown area. They got a lot of nice apartments and stuff. I just was driving in the highway, and then I went to my suite hotel where I had a refrigerator. Isn't it the small pleasures, Riley? I walk in, I'm like, oh, there's a fridge.
So and what'd you put in it?
Nothing. I thought I was going to put but I went to McDonald's. I went to the Cincinnati McDonald's, and I had one of those awkward moments. I walked on Cincinnati sidewalks to get to the Cincinnati McDonald's to have the Cincinnati filet of fish. It's all very important because these are the experiences I've had. I've got Sherry, the woman who's taking care of me here in Cincinnati, looking at me going, when are you going to say something nice about our city, please?
Uh-huh.
Okay, mister, I am not going to babysit you if you're going to sit there and talk dirt about my city. Everyone's been lovely. I'm looking forward to getting out into it today. But I did have an awkward moment where you go to the McDonald's, and just to show how bad the economy is in this administration's America, I got a guy who's probably about your age, Riley.
Oh, wait a minute.
And he's working at the McDonald's, and it was one of those moments where I knew the cat didn't want to be there, but I appreciated the fact that I'm sure he needed the job. And there was just one of these great moments where I'm ordering, you know, and I order, you know, a side salad from McDonald's, because, you know, I'm trying to be healthy.
Mm-hmm.
The filet of fish. God knows that's healthy.
Filet of fish and a side salad. That's the same thing I order from McDonald's.
Right. So I get the side salad, and this dude is working the computer, and he's getting pissed. You know, he's like, and I'm like, what? Is there anything I can do? He's like, well, I can't find the salad thing. I need a manager. So he starts running around.
You need a manager to find the salad button on a cash register.
But it wasn't like he wasn't dumb. He was just frustrated with the machinery, and I could tell he was frustrated with his job, and he's running around, you know, calling the guy's name. And I'm like, is there anything I can do to make this easier? He's like, he just says no, and he says it's $2.88. I'm like, but that doesn't seem right. So I'm giving you the salad. I don't know where the manager is, right? Just take the salad and go home. You know?
Wow.
So I'm like, all right, buddy. Thanks, pal. You know, and I went back to the hotel, and it's all been very nice. What am I missing back there? Everything all right?
Well, you know, we're trying to hold it down here. Maren, what? I got a copy of that Fug CD.
Oh, no.
They sent me a copy, too.
Are you going to play it now?
Well, I don't know. You know, Brendan, we played it a little this morning. It's in all our heads now. It's even in Brendan. Brendan's walking around saying, thou shalt not kill.
Thou shalt not covet
the neighbor's ass.
Yeah, it's a very, you know, I was thinking about that CD because I was thinking about it all day, actually. because I'm talking to people about, you know, music today, and I was talking to Sherry about how this station, you know, works and about how, you know, FM radio works and how much music goes out there. And it's weird. On that Fug CD, I don't know who sent it to us. We should probably find out. But I, as I said yesterday, I'd heard of the Fugs, and they are proto-hippies. They're pre-hippies. These are the guys that were sort of in between the beatniks and the hippies, and it was sort of a thriving poetry club. Not even a rock scene. It was some sort of folk slash, you know, beatnik poetry slash jazz scene. But you can hear a rawness. Even though those songs are stupid and silly, you could tell those were guys doing something for the first time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, I was a kid when the Fugs came out.
Mm-hmm.
Inexplicably, my older brother, Clayton, had a copy of a Fugs album.
Well, Clayton was a New York guy, so he knew everything that was going on.
Yeah, and he was living, at the time, he was living on the Lower East Side of Manhattan, and the Fugs were not far away. I mean, he used to hold court in Tompkins Square Park.
Right.
So, I you know, I'm like maybe 14 years old or whatever, and I slip on this Fugs record one time when my brother wasn't home. And I hear all of this cursing, and I hear all of this stuff about I'm not going to Vietnam, and, you know, we want to do your mom, and all this kind of stuff. I'm saying, whoa, wait a minute. This is not going to be heard on WABC, which, of course, was the big monster radio station in New York at the time. And suddenly I realized that there was this whole other world that I knew very little about, that people were doing what I thought was some really exciting things. So then, of course, I went further, you know, went forward from there, got Playboy and a bunch of other stuff, and became a man.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, I'm learning that there, for me, there is a whole other world that I know nothing about, and I'm in Cincinnati. I know nothing about Cincinnati, and now I think Sherry, am I, she's looking at me. Am I getting anything? Is it getting better? I love Cincinnati. Look out that window. It's nothing but darkness, but I know there's a lot of good people out there. But talking about the Fugs, it just amazed me that it was almost like when we first came on the air and we were getting those phone calls from the middle of the South, from those people that were sort of like, I'm in Virginia in my basement.
Yeah.
I can't talk too loud because someone will know I'm listening to you. That there is a thrill, a cathartic thrill of hearing something for the first time.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I could sense that, and that's why it's so compelling. It's not just the catchy little lyrics; it's just the weird sort of groove that was going on at the time.
Well, so, these guys were anarchists, you know, Mark.
Anarchists. That's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm going to go. I'm meeting a bunch of people from the station. I'm going to be doing some other shows later in the day. So I think that's the pitch I'll give them. I'll say we're like the Fugs. We're like anarchists on the airwaves. It's great. We're the revolution, man.
There you go. And then they're going to say the who?
Yeah.
No, the Fugs.
Yeah. But we got a great show. We got Greg Proops. He's going to be in England. And now Blair won. That's pretty clear.
Yeah.
But it's very interesting the way they phrase this stuff in the British paper, that he won, but his party's been chastised. Ooh, they chastised his party, but he still won.
He won, but he paid for doing the Iraq War.
How did he pay for it, though, if his party's still in power? I mean, I don't understand English politics. You know, I barely understand American politics some days.
I can tell you, but it would take too long. We got to go to break shortly. But Blair could be out before his term is half done.
Okay, you're going to have to explain this to me. And Greg Proops will probably have some insight on it because he's in England, comedian Greg Proops.
Yeah.
We've got Stephen Johnson, whose book, Everything Bad is Good for You, I read a bit of. And he's talking about this will make... This make Larson happy and all the video game freaks out there in the world that playing video games, he says, actually makes you smarter. And we got Martin Short to talk about his new Jiminy Glick movie.
Yeah.
All that and a lot more. It's 14 past the hour. You're listening to Air America Radio.
Thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor. And thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's ass. Thou shalt not steal.
Morning Sedition, delivering you from evil in 3 hours or less. Air America Radio.
Bomb, the Tiger Bomb pain relieving patch.
Take a tip from me, Jerry Rice. Go for the bomb, Tiger Bomb, and put the tiger in your team.
Available at drugstores everywhere.
Nineteen past the hour. Good morning. It's Morning's Edition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley. It's Air America Radio.
How you doing, Maron?
I'm all right. I'm in Cincinnati. I've just been informed, Riley, that, you know, I can't take this chili thing lightly.
Really?
I've been informed that there are people in this city, and I don't want to condescend, that because these, some of these people take this chili very seriously. There are apparently two competing camps of Cincinnati chili. It's very unique in the sense that apparently it has chocolate and perhaps cinnamon in it in some respects. It's derived from a Greek recipe that I think might be similar to a moussaka recipe. I don't know. I'm talking out of ignorance. And I, myself, being a vegetarian, am reaching out to my new city, Cincinnati, where I am here for 2 days at Go Bananas, and I'm here on WCKY 1530. I'm reaching out to tell somebody, please, give me some vegetarian Cincinnati chili.
Vegetarian. Hey, listen, Maron, we got a sing-along to do.
What are you doing?
You ready?
Okay.
And a one, and a two. Hit me!
Shout not chill. Chill. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's ass. Thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's ass.
Thou shalt not steal. How long do we do it for? Steal. I need the words, man. Who would have known that the thugs would be, how would they, they're probably, I don't know, there's a couple of those guys are still alive, right?
They're on the train on their way up here now. Julie Cooperberg is very much alive as far as I know.
Is he on a real train or just the one in his head, man?
Well, you never know. He might be on the Anarchist Express.
Oh, yeah, we should get one of those guys in. I've they're one of those bands I heard about for a million years. And as I said, I read Ed Saunders, one of the leaders of that group, wrote that amazing book, The Family, on Charles Manson.
Yeah. I mean, these guys are, for a lot of people of my vintage, and I'm saying this specifically for that construction worker from Queens that your wife ran into, Mark and the old guy.
I haven't heard about it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But look, these guys represented a certain level of originality, a certain defiance of authority that was, during the early 1960s, a novel idea. Let's just put it that way.
That, among many novel ideas.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of novel ideas, it looks looks like your boys over at Public Broadcasting, Marin, they're involved in some novel stuff.
What is going on with that? Apparently this guy Tomlinson, who's been put in place by the Republicans, who used to be at Reader Digest, a lot of people don't realize this, but the Republicans are now taking over public broadcasting. They're taking over PBS. It is not an evolution. It's not a change. They're actually taking it over from the ground up. And I guess one of the first major changes under the new regime over there is Mr. Rogers' neighborhood is now gated.
And they've with security.
They've apparently assigned these ombudsmen who will oversee the content of public TV and radio broadcasts by killing the content of public TV and radio broadcasts. I don't understand how we let this happen or what we can do, because apparently, 30,000, 40,000 people have written in about this problem. This guy they now have a woman there who's working there, Mary Catherine Andrews. Who was one of Rove's people.
Yeah, I mean, this is nothing less, Mark, than a coup d'etat. This is the kind of stuff that the thugs actually warned us about back in the day. These folks have decided that PBS is a bastion of liberal media bias, and they're out to change that. And we're going to have something on them a little bit later, because I have a little segment I call the Dog of the Week, not to give it away, but you may hear more about this. But I got to say, this is a coup. This is an attempt to change the face of public broadcasting. And if it works, people are not going to recognize what they're contributing their monies to very, very soon. I mean,
explained that to me the other day, Riley, is that this really is about money, because, there is government money that goes into PBS, and then there is private money that goes into PBS. And much of that private money, it could very well and will, I assume, be coming from Republican donors.
Yeah, I mean, right now there's $400 million at the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which, of course, Kenneth Tomlinson now chairs. That's how much they're getting in federal funding. And little by little, just like they do with Social Security, just like they do with apparently $100 million in Iraq, they're going to make that federal funding start to disappear. They're going to start saying, well, okay, we're getting more money out of the private sector. We're getting more money from corporations. We're getting more money from individual donors. And, of course, these individual donors will be, kicking in because they feel that it no longer has this media bias. This guy, Tomlinson, had the stones to secretly hire somebody to track some of the programming over there, Maron.
What does that mean, track?
And in other words, sit there and watch it and listen to it and point out what they see as liberal media bias.
Yeah, they're sitting there going, okay, check, that's the truth. We're going to have to get rid of that.
Yeah.
Check, oh, that seems like it's actual credible reporting. Man, that's got to go. Let's see, what is that? Oh, my God, this is a person actually promoting tolerance and acceptance. Man, that's got to go. We got a lot of work to do here.
Absolutely. And remember now, you know, Tomlinson comes from that bastion of liberal media bias, Reader's Digest.
Yeah, where they use the word condensed instead of censor.
Yeah, exactly. You know, my paw, page three. It's incredible stuff. And, you know, Newt Gingrich tried a decade ago to defund public television and public radio. And look, you know, to an extent, Maron, we compete against public radio. But you know what? It should still be there. Maybe its elimination would help us here at Air America, but the bottom line is I grew up and have benefited from watching public radio and public television, and I'm not taking this lying down. This is ridiculous what they're trying to do.
Yeah, and I tell you, we got a lot of our listeners, Riley. Initially, when, as you recall, when Reagan passed away, we did not toe the party line. There was a certain amount of respect that everybody thought this man deserved in response to his death. And we did not toe a party line on that. We were critical of his career, of his legacy on that day. And a lot of our listeners came over to us because when they went to NPR, there was nothing but sort of fanfare and eulogies and, you know, interviews with conservative pundits and people that knew Reagan. And I think that was really a big shift and really showed where NPR was going. Because don't you remember that? We were getting emails. It's like, dude, I am never listening to NPR again. And I actually, you know, we still get emails like that. There's still people that realize when they did a poll not too long ago and just exploring, you know, who was interviewed on all of the public broadcasting shows on radio, on NPR. And it was like 60 to 70% conservative.
Oh, yeah.
They're sneaking them in. They've been sneaking it in for a long time.
Well, any place that's got a home for the likes of Larry Elder is somewhat problematic for me, but yeah. I quibble. When we come back, we're going to talk about the British elections. We're going to tell you who won, who lost, and why. And we've got Greg Proops, comedian extraordinaire, coming up, Maron.
And of course, right on, Riley.
All right. He's live in Cincinnati. I'm live in New York. This is Morning Sedition, Air America.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
So join us here Sunday night on Air America Radio.
The revolution starts now.
Thirty-four past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. I am in Cincinnati, Ohio, watching the sun come up over the Bob Evans across the street, the Arby's that I can see through my window. I have been told, we got a call over the break, that there are some wonderful museums I need to go to here in Cincinnati. There's things to do. I have not gotten a call about vegetarian Cincinnati chili. That is forthcoming. I imagine that it will 866-303-2270. Vegetarian Cincinnati chili. If you would, I would appreciate it. Riley, we were talking about PBS before, and you remember that story from a while back about the United Church of Christ wanting to advertise on ABC, sort of promoting a message of tolerance and acceptance in their church. We welcome anybody. It does not matter what color you are, what your sexual orientation is. We welcome everybody. And ABC said the network does not take advertising from religious groups. That's a quote. The network doesn't take advertising from religious groups. It's a longstanding policy, end quote. That was from Susan Sewell, an ABC spokesperson. Now, apparently, they're going to run an ad from Focus on Family.
You know what?
James Dobson from the Crystal Fascist Zombie Brigade has got an ad on ABC television.
Yeah, that longstanding policy has turned out to be a longstanding crock.
Yeah. I mean, what is that about? They're actually putting on an ad during, what is their show, the Super Nanny?
Super Nanny.
And it's going to be about, it's going to be for kids. It's going to be, basically, I think the ad is somewhere around, it's promoting child abuse, I believe. The Christo Fascist Zombie Brigade is running an ad that says it's okay to beat your children because it'll teach them a lesson. This is why so many of them are in such deep denial, Riley. This is the kind of upbringings they have where, you know, the truth is beat out of them. They grow up afraid. They grow up angry. And eventually they just repress all of that anger and hate and contempt, and they mask it in a denial and a delusional form of religiosity that is a threat to this country, and this is where it starts.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
ABC is getting behind it.
Well, and you know, this is James Dobson we're talking about here. Audio tapes like To Spank or Not to Spank, which I hope is about kids, but the use of corporal punishment, how to administer it with love. So in other words, on the one hand, saying that you, you know, will deal with anyone, including gay people, black people, Asians, or whoever, that's controversial. But beating your child behind, that's okay.
You know, it seems like these guys are on literally, for the most part, ideologically, an ethical, you know, slippery slope. And now look at this. I mean, who knows? Why give a parent the license to make a decision about how much beating is good? You know, why give a parent, you know, the permission to beat their kid, given, like, you don't know what that parent has gone through themselves. You don't know whether or not they know what's right or what's wrong. Why give anybody the license to beat their kid? Were you hit when you were a kid, Riley?
Yeah, I was. And routinely. And I vowed after, you know, when I was a kid that I would not beat my kids when I got older because I didn't like it when I was a kid.
Yeah, I just don't, you know, I don't know. Well, my father and mother did not beat me, really. I got a couple times got popped in the head. So I'll tell you, I never got the full-on beaten. I never got the swatch or the belt or anything like that. Just a couple, every once in a while, my dad would come at me with the powerful two fingers, like, bap! You know what I mean?
Okay.
I think I got one beaten once for losing his saw. It seemed to revolve around tools.
Losing his saw? What were you doing with it, Mark?
Yeah, who the hell knows? I left it behind in the, you know, the house. I was cutting something off. I, you know, building something. How many kids have gotten beaten over tools? I'll tell you, I bet you that's a long list.
Yeah, right. I got, you know what I used to get beaten for? I would get beaten for breaking the family rules. When I was growing up, when we lived in suburban New York City, I was not allowed to play in front of the house. So what did I proceed to do? Play in front of the house.
Right.
And, you know, there were people on my block who were not only authorized to rat me out to my parents, but were authorized to beat me. Well, I shouldn't say beat me because that sounds like, you know, you they're actually abusing me.
Yeah.
To whip my behind in lieu of my parents.
That's crazy.
Oh, yeah, no. There were people who were authorized. There's a woman named Mother Grayson. I'm sorry, not Mother Grayson. Mother Gibson. Everybody I knew was Mother somebody.
Yeah.
And Mother Gibson lived in a house down the end of the block, and she used to take care of us when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And if she caught me playing in front of the house, she would whip my behind, then tell my parents, and my parents, each one in turn, would take, you know, take their shot at whipping my behind.
But in retrospect, when you think about it, did it teach you a lesson? When I think back of getting hit, I think about my feelings being hurt. I don't really, maybe it's deeper in my unconscious than I know, but I don't remember learning anything. I remember saying, you know, I remember thinking, I don't love you anymore. Why'd you do that? You know, but I don't remember saying, I'll never do that again because it was so random.
Oh, yeah. Well, see, it at a point you get, you get that feeling in you that you've either got to react to it somehow. I mean, my first thing was try not to cry, okay? Not to give them the satisfaction of seeing tears well out of my face.
Oh.
That didn't usually work.
You're breaking my heart, Riley. I'm just seeing a little Mark Riley sitting there with his face all twisted up, trying not to cry.
Trying not to cry. But,
oh,
I mean, look,
no.
It didn't always work. But as far as, you know, saying, well, don't break the rules,
yeah.
I still tried to break the rules. The main thing was just not to get caught breaking the rules.
I remember I got popped in the head by my algebra teacher. That's how much of a smartass I was. If, you know, if the teacher can't hold back, boy, that was a bad day. This guy, Mr. Sanderson, I bet you he's not alive anymore. Who wins now?
Why, you didn't kill him, did you?
No. Hey, he was all right. He was an ex-military guy, and he was frustrated with me because I just didn't see any point to math. And, of course, because I didn't see any point to math, I didn't see any reason for the rest of the class to learn math. So I did everything I could to usurp his power. This was the same, you know, school that actually ended up not inviting me back, actually kicking me out.
It was a substandard private school in Albuquerque, New Mexico, that wrote my parents a letter suggesting a military school because I had the wrong kind of leadership qualities, whatever the hell that means.
You know, I went to a military school, and I was taught by a lot of ex-military guys, and they had different ways of dealing with students who acted up in class, including things like throwing, if you fell asleep. I had an algebra teacher, ironically enough, who would chuck an eraser at your head.
I wish they had done that. I slept through everything. Boy, I slept through English. I slept through algebra. I don't know how the hell teachers could let that happen. But getting back to the hitting thing, I just believe that there's no barometer for this stuff. And I think giving parents the entitlement or the permission to hit their kids when they think it's right, it's just going to be abused. I see, like, you telling me that your parents gave other people in the neighborhood the permission to hit you. I saw something happen on the train. You know when you see family arguments at the supermarket on the train? I saw some man hit this kid so hard, and I don't know what the relationship was between the man and the woman that were there. They didn't look quite like the kid's parents, like maybe he was a stepfather. Who the hell knows? But I'll tell you something. When I saw him pop this kid, and he hit him in the leg, all right, he hit him in the leg, so it was a random act. It was an act out of anger. It was an act out of frustration. It was not, now it's time for your punishment, and I want you to understand why you're being punished. I mean, hell, you could send a kid to his room for that much, deny him dessert, you know, tell him that he can't go out with his friends. I mean, it seems to me that ever being violent would be the last thing that any parent would want to do if they could avoid it. But this guy popped this kid, and it came out of, I looked at him, I felt the moment. You know when you feel a moment on a train or in a public place where it's just like a wave of evil just comes over the entire environment? Because
yep.
Whatever the hell this came from, it came from a very hostile, hateful, reactionary place, and this kid was crying, and he was just left to sit there and cry by himself. The mother, who I'm assuming is the mother, could not do anything because she was deferring to whatever this guy was in her life and letting him beat the kid like that in front of people, and it just broke my heart because that was the one problem in my house is that when I did get hit, the other parent would always be like, it's okay, come here. Here, have some ice cream. So I'd be used as this emotional pawn in this horrible game.
Well, you know, my parents were always united in beating my behind. I mean, there was never a situation where I could get my behind whipped by one and go to the other for sympathy. It was like, get out of here. You know you deserved it. And in many instances, I got to say, some of the things I did as a kid, I did deserve to get my behind whipped for. I talked my brother into peeing in some milk one time.
And you got hit for that?
He got hit for it. He ratted me out. Then I got hit for it.
Oh, man. So this is, we got a guy, Danny, listening to 1190 WLIB in New Jersey. He's on the phone. He's got something to say. Danny, what's up?
I'm in your club. I also got beat over tools.
You did, right?
Yeah.
You mean there was a tool beaters club?
Yeah. I don't know if it's so much a tool, but it was like a broken snowblower that we were transporting from one house to another one winter. I was real small. My job, as my dad was pulling the sled that we were pulling it on, was to try to hold it on. And after it fell off the sled twice, he popped me real good.
So what do you learn from that? What do you learn from that?
Not much.
Because that was just out of anger. That was out of frustration. Had nothing to do with discipline. He was angry, and he made you cry. And you know what? You never forgot it because it was pointless.
True, absolutely. But that was the one time. But, you know, but on the other hand, Mark, you also had the right idea. You said that you didn't want to that the only thing you learned was not to get caught anymore.
That there you go.
The rule. But that's the point. That's the point. When you're a kid, you're supposed to want to break the rules, and the point is not to not break the rules, but not to get caught. So there has to be that element of fear. You have to fear your parents enough so you could go out and break the rules and make it feel exciting and you know, do all the things.
But Danny, this administration frightened the entire country into voting for them. There's a way to do it without popping a kid. You know what I mean? There's propaganda. There's coercion. There's, look what happened to so-and-so. I just think, what do you got to be violent with the kid to teach him that kind of lesson?
Well, again, I think that if you're talking about kids, you're talking about breaking the rules, you know, there's got to be an element of fear. That, you know, I feared my parents to high heaven a lot of times. And also, I was also a good cop, bad cop, too. You know, one would beat me, the other one would say, okay, it's right, just like you said.
Oh, well, you were lucky, Danny. You were just lucky. But let me tell you something, though. You know how this manifested later in life, the whole thing about not getting caught? When I went to military school, I started smoking cigarettes at like 14. I didn't get busted till I was 17. Yeah. I mean, I got away with it for like 3.5 years. And when my mother finally caught me, it was completely by accident. I was on my way home from military school. I turned a corner with a cigarette in my mouth, and there she was. I thought she was she got up there too early. But, I mean, it's like the whole not getting caught thing kind of stays with you till you're
You know
adult.
What? You're so much, you know, I don't know if I got a good case here. I just don't like seeing kids cry. I didn't like being, you know, the brunt of people's frustration. I was plenty of frightened. You know, my parents instilled a very deep sense of guilt for no reason in me. All right, but that did not stop me from doing things, but it certainly, you know, they didn't have to beat me. I was beating the hell out of myself.
Yeah, you felt bad about whatever it was you were doing wrong.
I still do. We'll be back with Greg Proops in England. You know him from Whose Line Is It Anyways? He's a very funny man. Looking forward to talking to him about what happened in the elections there. Maybe you can explain it to me. It's 46 past the hour. You're listening to Air America Radio.
This is Congressman Barney Frank, and you're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Six past the hour. Good morning. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron in Cincinnati, Ohio. That's Mark Riley in New York City.
Hey.
How you doing, man?
I'm doing all right.
All right. I just want to say good morning to Chicago, Illinois. We're back in Chi-Town on 850 AM WCPT. I am here going out over 1530 WCKY, the Revolution of Talk Radio here in Cincinnati. Greg Proops is in France. He's on the phone with us. What are you doing in France, Greg Proops, comedian extraordinaire, international traveler?
Well, Mark.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to wake you up.
There's a gig here in France, a stand-up gig. It's at a place called La Java, and it's in a very kind of dicey neighborhood here in Paris. Upstairs was a bunch of men smoking hookahs and glaring at me. I came in, I got on stage, and I said, it's nice to be performing underneath where the Al-Qaeda meets here in Paris.
Al-Qaeda. Hello, Al-Qaeda meeting
Hello,
upstairs.
Hello, where the Al-Qaeda meets.
Al-Qaeda upstairs.
Apparently no one had ever said that before, even though to me it seemed clearly like that was what was going on.
So did people laugh, or were they like, ooh?
Oh, no, they loved it because, you know, when you're playing underneath a place in a jazz club and above you, the eventual destruction of the society you live in is being planned. It's an exciting and kind of momentous event.
Sounds good to me.
People in America always say things like, hey, you're going to France. Let me ask you something, man. Do they get your humor over there? And it's like, well, dude, how many times do you go see, like, French comedians in America that speak only French? That would be never. So I guess they figure, like, French people are lining up to see me because I was on, like, you know, Pourquoi line is it anyway?
Big proof, so isn't like French humor? I mean, am I wrong in characterizing? I mean, there's French intellectualism, and then there's French humor, which really revolves around, you know, mugging men making fart noises. Am I wrong?
Well, no. No, you're not. There's of course, the farce, and then there's the bourgeois comedy of manners, yeah. And then there's men falling on the ground and acting like babies and wearing diapers and making fun of Japanese people. And that's the excitement. It's all expats who come to the show. But there
so
are
those are, those are your openers?
Yeah. Johnny Meme. They're French people who come to the show, and you can tell the French people in the audience because they don't laugh. They simply nod and then turn to each other and discuss every joke.
You're all hard.
And, of course, bush bashing, always a winner. Even with the Al-Qaeda guys, they like that stuff, too.
Sure, they probably come down for that.
Yeah. They can be torn away from their apricot-flavored tobacco or whatever.
Yeah. So we... Go ahead, Riley.
No, Greg, I wanted to ask if people knew over there about these explosions, one of which Marin kind of saw the immediate reaction to because he was riding in a car a block away from where these two grenades went off near the British consulate.
Oh, yeah. Now, my understanding of the latest information I've got from CNN, the disinformation network, is that they were homemade.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, they were. Okay. God, what happened, Mark? You were riding nearby?
Yeah, well, I was just I was coming down Second Avenue. I saw the fire trucks and stuff. Then we got to when we got to work. Apparently, somebody planted some explosive flowers and some flower pots, you know, out front that were meant to barricade the consulate building from some stuff. But what is it? What is the feeling of like? Do you feel any pending sort of? Is there still fear in France? Because France is pretty. There's a lot of tension, racial tension and terrorist tension. Is there any of that going on?
Not really, not so much in France today, I didn't even think the English news is. I mean, obviously everyone was a little bit flippy about the consulate thing, but it's not as bad as you might think here. They're also in the midst of the World War II week.
They lost that one, I think, right?
No, they won.
No, we got a W in that one.
Yeah.
So it's not as although it is being reported here, obviously. But the big news is, of course, the British election, and then the French have an EU referendum coming up at the end of the month. So they're.
And where are you going now? Where are you going? You're going to go. You're going to go back to England, or you're going. You traveling anywhere else?
No, I'm going to London, and then I'm coming to New York after a week's time to come out and do my little chat show.
What is that?
Well, I do one in Los Angeles at Largo, which you've played at, of course, many times. It's a hipper than thou place where the audience doesn't actually laugh. They just write stuff down. And then they email someone that they work for at Paramount.
People don't realize that's how show business works, is that there's literally just, you know, 500 people in show business calling each other all day long and ruining people's careers over, you know, just, you know, show. If you have one bad set at Largo, if two of the right people are there, they can ruin your career internationally.
Oh, I know. It's fantastic. No, people don't realize that show business is actually the smallest fraternity on earth.
Yeah.
And that we actually do all know each other and are susceptible to our whims.
What was that thing you said once? It's like, you know, three guys named Josh and some
of
those.
It's true. In L.A., whenever you go into a room, there's three angry guys named Josh. As a comic who's been around a long time, what I need is a Jewish guy named Gary who's 27 years old to really get my worldview out there and write a sitcom premise for me.
So the chat show.
The older man.
Now, I want people to know that you're not traveling internationally because you can't get work in the United States. You're one of the most popular comics around.
That is my opening line.
Yeah.
Hey, Chris.
There's a strange sort of group of comics that sort of tour around the world that nobody really knows about anymore. You don't have to go into that, Greg. But
if you wish, Rich Hall, who is tremendous. He lives in England and he tours all around the world and stuff. And
he'll tour several different characters, given you know, whatever he feels like doing on any given particular day.
No kidding. Yeah,
so tell me about the chat show, because that's going to be in New York. You're going to come in and do our show in New York, and you can have you have glad guests and you do a whole thing.
Yes, pal. I'm glad to. It's a live chat show. It's not on TV. It's not for the TV. It's in a cabaret at Joe's Pub at the Public Theater, which is a really nice little room.
Great.
With a bar and a piano and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Lip Synca, the famous lip syncing drag queen, is also a concert pianist, and he's going to be my musical director. The guests are Jeff Goldblum and Lewis Black, and you'll get to hear me and Lewis riff together, and then Jeff Goldblum and I will riff together, and there's mirth and mayhem and merriment, and I'll do a set as well, and it's really nice. It's really casual. It's the I don't mean to be dismissive in any way, but this is how I have to put it in order to get the message across. It's the anti-Leno. I actually listen.
Yeah.
And there's humor. I don't mean anything by that. I don't want the crowd to go, well, you're just bitter because of course I'm bitter. Look at me. I'm just saying that it's a live chat show. It's not a TV one, so we're not pressed to get people's product across. Although Jeff Goldblum is in a seditious little play on Broadway right now called The Pillow Man.
I think you're called, actually, Greg, if I'm not mistaken, you're called lyrically bitter, aren't you?
Yeah, it's a lyrically bitter, poetically bitter.
Yes.
Poetically bitter.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds great, man. So do you know Jeff Goldblum from before? Is this something you put together? I mean, I know you know Lewis. But
Lewis, of course, we've known 100 years. I'd like to lie to you and tell you that Jeff Goldblum and I roll together. And
yeah.
We've been, you know, just who-banging and smoking blunts and listening to jam.
But no.
The truth is I met him through another actor friend, Ileana Douglas, and she hooked me up with him. So that's how I got him to do the show, and I'm looking forward to throwing down with him on the night because he's a very interesting, funny, weird guy.
He is very intense. So we'll have you in when you come back to New York. That show's going to be on May 16th at 9:30 at Joe's Pub, and we'll talk to you when you're in the city. Greg, have a good time. Be careful.
Thank you, Mark.
All right, take care,
good luck
man.
In Cincinnati, brother.
Thanks, man. I'm having a good time.
Thanks.
Yep. So, sun's coming up over the Shell station.
Yo, Matt,
outside of my, yeah.
Sorry to interrupt you, buddy, but we have Future Mark on line one.
Oh, great. I love Future Mark.
Hey, buddy, what's
hey,
up?
Hey, buddy, what's up? What's that noise, man?
Oh, it's just a war. Don't worry about it.
The war? It sounds like a Pac-Man noise.
It is Pac-Man. They're all over the place. They're eating our energy pellets. All those old video games were just prototypes. And the kids that designed them, they're running the war. So you see a lot of that kind of stuff now. Miss Pac-Man, too.
Wow, that's weird, man. So we're still at war in 2050?
Oh, yeah. We've had like 70 wars since your time. The war on Terra ended a long time ago. Then there was the war against them.
Them? Who's them?
Whoever. I think that was the point. Then there was the so-called War of the Green Vegetables.
Wow.
The Hawaiian Wars, the war between Second Avenue and Tribeca.
Wow.
Civil War II. That was bad.
Yeah.
The South was winning that one, of course, until the Norwegians stepped in. They're great.
What was that noise?
Space invaders. For real. Invaders from space.
Really?
Well, you know, if you shoot a whole row of them, you get to go to the next level.
Dude, was that a bomb?
Yes. My banana just exploded. See, now with all the genetic engineering, anything could be rigged to blow up. And since we have to import all our food and, you know, basically the whole world's out to get us now. So, you know, everything just blows up.
Man, can't we just fight back? Aren't we a superpower anymore or what?
Oh, God, no. America's totally in the minor leagues now. Everyone treats us like we used to treat them.
What's that, a doorbell bomb?
Nah, it's just a doorbell. It's my bag of wheat from Somalia.
Wow. Oh, wheat from Somalia?
Oh, yeah, dude. Once they figured out how to control the weather, Somalia was pretty much unstoppable. They're nuked up, armed for bear, and their fast food franchises are on, like, every corner.
Hmm.
Oh, dude, I gotta go. I gotta check this for bombs. Sometimes it doesn't blow up until after you eat it. Messy stuff, man.
Hey, whoa, wait, man. Is there anything I should know?
Yes. You kick ass at Go Bananas in Cincinnati this Friday.
Oh, good.
Yeah, so much so that you actually move here. I'm calling from Cincinnati right now.
Oh, get out of here. I moved to Cincinnati?
Yeah, but don't worry. Cincinnati moved. We got a beach house.
Oh, okay, cool. All right, man.
All right, talk to you later.
That's always weird to talk to me in the future, me. Yeah, but it's nice to know that I'm going to be living in Cincinnati because I guess I should get used to it this weekend. It's 16 past the hour. We'll be back after this on Air America Radio.
Hi, this is Charles Barkley, and you're listening to Mark Maron and Mark Riley. Anything less would be uncivilized. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Month. For free quotes, call 800-670-LIFE. That's 800-670-LIFE, or visit lifequotes.com to view the lowest rates.
Twenty-one past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yo,
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I am in Cincinnati, Ohio. I will be at Go Bananas tonight. If you're here listening to 1530 WCKY, the Revolution of Talk Radio, good morning. Mark Riley is back there in New York City. I have some dreams backed up in my head, man, because you know we're only doing a few of these a week now, and I didn't go to therapy on Thursday, but here's last night's dream. I'm at a PBS headquarters with my dead cat Butch. Butch says, Mark Maron, we must not allow the Republicans to get their dirty hands on this network. We must put our own dirty hands all over it. I say, what are you up to, Butch? What are you going to do about it? Butch says, put on your gas mask and shut up. Suddenly, there's a puff of blue smoke, and then all the PBS employees are laying on the floor unconscious in a pile of tasteful khaki and Oxford cloth. I said, Butch, what the hell did you do? Butch lit a cigarette and said, don't worry. The smoke makes them have the most marvelous erotic dreams. They'll wake up moist and smiling. We went into the conference room, which was now filled with cats. Butch leaned back in her chair and put her feet up on the table. Comrades, PBS is ours. The safe middle-brow East Coast Ivy League NPR listening latte-drinking bias is now finished. Pitch me some show ideas. Dazzle me. One gray cat jumped up on the table and said, Butch, how about this? Desperate house cats. Humping suburbia, shredding expensive drapes. You know the drill. Butch says, I love it. Give me 26 episodes. Go heavy on the drapes and the humping. Who's next? This one timid little cat in horn-rimmed glasses says, I almost have funding for a 20-hour documentary event called Ken Burns Cats. We have all these sad letters from the animal shelter to read them when we wind up. And we wind up Sam Watterson, Susan Sarandon, and Patrick Stewart. Butch says, all right, I like it. But lose the Star Trek guy. Baldy creeps me out. And whittle it down to 8 hours. Next, anything for the kittens? One young hip cat says, hey, what about Jiggle the Bell on the String, reality show cheap to produce. What do you think? Jiggle the Bell on the String, man. Sound good? Butch realizes this is a perfect idea, so she proceeds to change it to show everyone her power. Butch waits for a minute before saying, I am not loving it. Keep the string, lose the bell. She stands up. All right, everyone, meeting over. Next time, bring me something with Muppets. Filthy Muppets. I woke up and my bed was filled with Bill Moyers, and that was awkward. That was awkward. A little weird having Bill Moyers in the bed, but he told me why, and he explained it to me, and it made sense. Anyways, the guest we're going to have after the next segment is an interesting book. He's a pal of my buddy Sam Lipsyte, Stephen Johnson. He's written a couple books. He's written Mind Wide Open, but this one is called Everything Bad is Good for You, How Today's Popular Culture is Actually Making Us Smarter. And I have some points of contention with Stephen Johnson, who says that being a perpetual video game addict from childhood will actually enable you to have all kinds of new mindset skills in operating your life in the future. I'm interested to hear what he has to say about this stuff, because I am not that guy. I find that if you engage too much with machinery of any kind, that you're moving towards some sort of soul death. But I guess, granted, that makes me believe in the soul, which maybe I do, maybe I don't. But it's like, it's the difference, Riley, between, you know, listening to the Fugs and listening to techno music. I think I'm old school, you know what I mean? I kind of like a little humanness, a little rawness. I think that too much machinery, too much pop culture makes kids and makes adults unemotional, makes them detached, makes them unable to connect in the organic nature in which humans were meant to connect in. You?
Well, yeah, it's interesting. There was a study done not too long ago. You remember there was a kid who shot up a school in Paducah, Kentucky, wounded a bunch of people, and that instance hit, I believe, 8 of the 10 targets he shot at, which is a very high percentage for a kid who had never touched a handgun before in his entire life. And you know what they found? They found that he had gotten the motor skills to do this by playing a particular video game. And forgive me, I can't remember the name of it. And this is striking when you consider that most police officers, guys who were trained to fire a gun, only hit the target on an average of 25 to 30% of the time. This guy, in 10 shots, hit 8 targets.
So I guess the real question even is not whether or not the video game made him do the violent thing that he did, but my question is, okay, granted he learned the skill of shooting the gun, perhaps from the video game. That's what made him good at it.
It made him accurate.
Theoretically, Oswald learned how to do that in the Marines. You can learn how to shoot guns in a lot of places. My question is, did playing the game and isolating himself with the equipment, with the machinery, with the fantasy situation of the game desensitize him towards his fellow students? Did it desensitize him towards empathy, humane behavior, conscience? I mean, that's my big question in these discussions is how does it compromise human conscience, humans' ability to empathize with other humans? I mean, that's really my biggest concern. I'm sure that, you know, sitting there playing with buttons all day or operating on many levels of game fantasy and rolling dice and playing Dungeons and Dragons and all the stuff that, you know, Larson does and like, you know, even the baseball leagues that Dan Pashman put together. I am not one of those people. I don't have that skill set because it doesn't really interest me. Maybe I'm lacking, but I'll tell you what, I'll cry, you know, at a commercial. See, I'm very emotionally connected.
And that's the important part, isn't it?
I guess. I mean, I thought that's what it was supposed to be important, to be able to have a sort of deep reaction to a piece of art, to have a deep reaction to a kid getting hit on a train. I just don't know that if what Stephen Johnson is talking about desensitizes us as well. I'm looking forward to talking to him.
We'll find out what he thinks and more of what Marin thinks when we come back here on Air America Radio.
Edition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Where they've been and where they're going on the next Kyle Jason Show this Saturday night on Air America Radio.
Before past the hour, Mark Maron here in Cincinnati. Mark Riley is in New York City.
Yes, I am.
You are. This is Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
You know, it's weird. You sound like you're right in my head, Riley. I feel like you're right next to me here.
Hey,
I am. What?
No, I'm looking at the empty music stand over there. Where's Marin?
I know. I feel like I'm in a spaceship. I really do. This place is huge. There's like thousands of radio studios here. I'm in a hallway. There's no one even supervising. I feel like I can do anything. I'm going to steal the computer. Anyways. I'm holding this book, Everything Bad is Good for You, How Today's Popular Culture is Actually Making Us Smarter. You're sitting there with the author, Stephen Johnson, who is also he's a contributing writer to Discover Magazine. He does the Emerging Technology column, also his book, Mind Wide Open, Your Brain and the Neuroscience of Everyday Life is available, as is this book on morningsedition.com. Good morning, Stephen Johnson. How are you?
I'm great, and I'm glad to be here.
All right. Good morning.
Well, look, you know, I was reading through your book. I was reading through your premise. I think you should explain it to our listeners first and tell them a little bit about what you call the sleeper curve.
Yeah, the sleeper curve, as you know, is kind of a reference to the classic joke from Woody Allen's movie Sleeper, where he wakes up 200 years later. He's like a 70s, you know, health food store owner, and he somehow jettisons 200 years in the future and wakes up, and all these doctors are amazed that he's asking for all these health foods. And they're like, doesn't he realize that, you know, hot fudge and cheeseburgers turned out to be really the most yeah. healthy thing you could eat? Yeah. And so it's a great gag that, you know, remember.
He was wrapped in tinfoil.
Yeah, it was a classic movie.
Yeah.
But what I argue in the book is that a lot of the things in the popular culture that we think of as being junk, the equivalent of kind of hot fudge, actually turn out to have, you know, in terms of their mental benefits, a lot of kind of virtues that we don't hear about enough.
Mental benefits. Can you flesh out that a little bit? Because I tend to think that along with these mental benefits that you talk about, that they are emotionally retarding.
Right. Yeah. I heard a little bit of what you were saying before. I mean, I think I think there's some validity to what you're saying, but you have to kind of put it all in the context of the state of the debate right now about pop culture, which, as you know, is, you know, basically the debate is, you know, one side thinks that the pop culture is so bad that, you know, the federal government needs to intervene. You know, the FCC needs to swoop down. There's so much violence and moral depravity and so on. And the other side just seems to think that the pop culture is just really, really bad. And that's, you know, that's the argument that we're having in a sense. And what I'm trying to point out is that if you look at it in terms of the amount of thinking you have to do to make sense of your average TV show, the amount of kind of decision-making, you know, strategies you have to work out to solve, you know, your average video game, that if you look at over the last 30 years, the culture has gotten increasingly complicated and mentally challenging. There's more kind of exercise that you have to do, the number of characters on an average TV show, the number of separate plot lines you have to follow, the amount of information you have to draw upon to complete a video game. All of those things are trending upwards at a dramatic rate. Now, there is also a lot of violence, there's also a lot of obscenity, and there may also be this kind of, you know, emotional component that you talk about. But nobody talks about this sleeper curve kind of trend towards more complexity. There's not – everybody just assumes that it's getting, you know, dumbed down and we live in this, you know, kind of trash culture. And I'm just trying to say, look, you're missing part of the story here. There's an important part that we should be, you know, at least acknowledging before we then take on the question of the violence or the emotional kind of impact.
Now, is this mental complexity, and I'm assuming because most of what you're talking about are things that are aimed at younger people, is this, for example, more beneficial to a child than perhaps teaching or not even teaching, allowing a child to teach his or herself how to play a musical instrument?
Well, first off, I mean, I think those things are great. I think reading novels are great. I don't, you know, mean to question any of those things. But if you look at, for instance, most of today's video games, and particularly some of the more popular ones like The Sims, for instance, which is the most popular video game of all time, you control a little family and, you know, you kind of move these characters around and try and satisfy their needs and build things on their house and get them things and kind of control their destiny.
Meanwhile, you're crying alone and you can't talk to your parents.
Right. But it's an unbelievably complicated game. I mean, the first thing that happens when anybody sits down who hasn't played video games recently, they realize that this stuff is really, really hard. It involves balancing a whole host of different kind of resources and recognizing patterns and, you know, solving complicated problems. And one key thing is it requires is patience. I mean, you have to sit there and struggle with this thing for long periods of time. And just as you were talking about a musical instrument, you have to learn the rules as you're playing. You have to teach yourself, in a sense, how to play the game.
All right.
Yeah.
Can I get in here, Stephen Johnson?
Yeah, sure.
Because there's one thing that eats at me about this. I understand your argument, and I think that you're probably right about the skills you're talking about. But really gets to me is that as everything becomes trivial in terms of pop culture, in terms of the complexity of narratives and television shows, and also as everybody, you know, like as you make an argument in your book about The Simpsons versus the Dick Van Dyke, though, about how culturally literate you have to be to get the nuances of the humor. All right. And also I guess the juxtaposition I'm going to make here is between that and the video games that are violent, you know, and the detachment one has when they're playing a video game from the actual violence in the world, is that isn't there something about context that's being lost here? Isn't there an encouraged detachment in terms of trivia like The Simpsons? Maybe all the kids are smarter and they know what's being referred to, but do they know its context? Do they know the process of the narrative of history?
Well, the first thing I would say is, you know, compare it to what the kids were doing 30 years ago.
Okay.
You know, I mean, I'm just trying to talk about the trend in society over the last 30 years.
Right.
So,
okay.
You know, we're not talking about some ideal age. I mean, you grew up around the, you know, roughly same time that I did. You know, most kids back in 1977 were not sitting there reading Middlemarch. You know, they were watching Three's Company. What I'm trying to say is that, you know, we've basically been immersed in this popular culture for better or for worse, and at least a lot of the trends are going up. I would prefer it if kids read more, you know, complex 19th century novels. My background is, you know, is that I did 5 years of grad school in English literature. You know, I've read like 95 19th century novels. You know, I know the virtues of those forms, but unfortunately we live in this kind of fallen state where people are going to be involved in popular culture, so we might as well figure out if it's going in a positive direction or in a negative direction.
But see, now, there's something that clicks here for me, because when you start talking about the early and mid-1970s, yeah, maybe there were some people that were watching Three's Company, but there were other kids that were sitting out in parks with a couple of turntables and a microphone, and they invented hip-hop music. And hip-hop music references popular culture in ways that video games can only hint at to a large extent.
Well, I would say that there are some video games that are absolutely central in the culture, and that in some ways one of the points I make in the book is that reality TV is one of the signs of how dominant video games are now, because all the reality shows are structured like video games.
But the reality TV comes 30 years after the birth of rap.
Oh yeah, I'm just saying there's a lot of innovation that the kids. I mean, one great example of this that's parallel to rap is the folks who are doing these kind of mashups now online, who are taking music and kind of resampling and building, you know, combining the White Album and Jay-Z's album.
Danger Mouse.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And they're using, you know, computers now. They're using programs like GarageBand, and there's a general, you know, trend towards more participation. You know, there are more people doing these kinds of mashups and you know, kind of remixing culture out there because of the internet and because of the digital technology
right.
as well. And that's another key component of the sleeper curve is mm-hmm. there's more, you're just involved more, actively engaged, you're posting on your weblog, you're doing your own kind of remix of things, and or you're actively controlling the kind of the fate of the character in the video game that you're playing.
I just realized I was old guy. I realized that a lot of my contempt is coming from the fact that I'm just not one of those people. I've never been one of those people. My video game, you know, expertise falls off at Galaga. You know, I've never been one of these people. I am. I like to engage with human beings. You know, I was reading. I get this fascination. Here's where this comes from, Stephen. I have this fascination with Eric Fromm, who's a famous post-Freudian psychiatrist thinker, about how the more people engage with machines, you know, whether or not they're having a human experience with that machine, it's still engaging with a machine, and it still is deadening some part of them. You know, and I understand now intelligence may be you know being bolstered up. And maybe increasing as time goes on, but I still think that, you know, all in all, you can be a really smart guy and be completely socially retarded unless someone's talking the language of these video games you're talking about. And is this really a proactive generation we're creating?
Yeah, let me take your objection really seriously, because I agree with a lot of it. In fact, in the book you mentioned, Mind Wide Open, my last one, I talked a lot about emotional IQ and the importance of that in being successful in life and being a human being. The one thing that I would say is that if you look at almost all the interesting trends of the last 3 or 4 years on the internet, almost all of them have involved enhancing people's social connection to other people and widening their social networks and, in fact, enabling new kinds of face-to-face encounters with people. So, for instance, meetup.com that was so central to the Dean campaign and the political campaigns is all about using the net to figure out new ways for people to come together in physical space and share ideas and emotional connection. There are a lot of it, you know, online dating, all these things. There are a lot of great trends towards that. So it's not just using the computer to interact with the computer. It's also using the computer to reach out and make new, you know, real-world friends.
Stephen Johnson, I have an 8-year-old daughter, so this whole thing kind of hits home to me. Now, she plays video games on the computer. She goes up and – but all of those video games combined, for me, are not as important as the fact that she takes piano lessons. And not only does she take piano lessons, but she's always been encouraged, both by myself and my wife, to improvise on the piano, play whatever it is that you feel. And to me, there's a human connection there that she's never going to get from video games.
But do you think when the piano was invented and it was the state-of-the-art technology that they were saying, well, you're just hanging around with this machine all day?
You know, maybe it's entirely possible that they were at some point. You know, I mean, remember that you know, pianists and musicians were not always widely well-regarded in society. That's
and
true.
And you know, Stephen, there was the outside chance that that may have been the case, but the guy downstairs was like, well, that guy's getting good. So there was a sharing going on some level.
Yeah, but there is sharing going on in the games. A lot of these games are networked, and also they have the same improvisational feeling because you often aren't given strict objectives in these games. Like The Sims, for instance, you can play it any way you want. There's no way to win The Sims. You decide if you want to have a family of 12 or if you want to just remain a bachelor and build a big bachelor pad. I mean, you can do anything you want in the game. So there's that same sense of open-ended kind of play that's so great in musical improvisation you also can have in the games. But what you, for instance, you don't actually get out of reading a book. I mean, whatever the virtues are of novel reading, you don't actually get to choose what happens or, you know, remake the novel in your own.
Well, actually, I'm not so sure about that. I read Guy de Maupassant as a kid and remade a lot of his horror stories just in my own head.
Yeah, you could do it with imagination, but it's not quite the same literal shaping of the actual story that you get when you're playing a game.
Well, I tell you, Stephen, it's obviously a very provocative book, and I apparently am afraid of cultural evolution. You know, I am trying to hold on some level to the Dick Van Dyke Show, which was even before my time.
Hey, I'm trying to hold on to Uncle Milty over here.
But I do appreciate what you're saying, and like I said, the book is very provocative. Everything Bad is Good for You, How Today's Popular Culture is Actually Making Us Smarter, available at morningsedition.com. Thank you for being with us, Stephen Johnson.
Hey, it was a lot of fun.
I appreciate it, Stephen.
We'll be back. It's 46 past the hour, Air America Radio.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com, Air America Radio.
Evaluate for 30 days. Call now, 1-800-900-2657. That's 1-800-900-2657.
Fifty past the hour, Mark Maron here. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. I am in Cincinnati, Ohio. If you're listening to 1530 WCKY, the Revolution of Talk Radio, good morning. I am watching the sun rise over your city. Mark Riley there in New York. How you doing, Mark?
I'm doing all right, man.
The miracles of modern technology. I thought that guy, Stephen Johnson, was pretty interesting. I get worked up about that kind of stuff, and you realize that when you do, When something like that, because I could have talked with that guy for an hour.
Yeah.
You know, but then you start to realize, hey, am I old guy? Am I not open-minded? But I got to be honest with you. I've never had the follow-through to get that involved with a lot of things. And I don't know if that's a liability or it's just because I'm more, emotionally based. It's hard for me to know, but the book, very provocative. Everything Bad is Good for You. What's the subtitle there? How Today's Popular Culture is Actually Making Us Smarter. I'm looking forward to finishing that book.
Yeah.
Well, right now, the Bible's book of Revelations portends the end of days and the second coming of the Christian Messiah, one of our president's favorite stories. Though no one knows when the end times will come, there are signs that will appear to men. Here on Morning Sedition, we won't let you be caught off guard by the end of the world. That's why we present this week's Rapture Watch with Cardinal Milthington of the recently disgraced Diocese of San Juan Capistrano. Your Grace.
Heed my words, thy unbound slakers of lust. with your Gustav Stickley rocking chairs, standing in line at Antiques Roadshow, hoping to cop a feel off that skinny blonde host with the bobbed hair. At auction, I'd say your soul might fetch anywhere from 40 to 50 eternities in hell. Could have gotten less if you hadn't refinished it. Why'd you do that? Your days are numbered, but not by using the blasphemous Arabic numbering system, but God's holy numbering system of knots, fingers, and piled rocks. It's too late for you to pant or even repant now, for your hearts have become the soiled bedchambers of Paula Abdul's poodles, Tweety, Thumbelina, and Tinkerbell. And I have come bearing good and bad news, Mark. Which do you want to hear first?
Well, how about the bad news first?
Okay, Mark. The bad news is, according to the BBC, or Beelzebub Central, the world's biggest ever religious theme park is about to open on the Ganges River in India. And that's right, it's Hindu.
Well, what's the good news?
Well, it means the end of the world, Mark. It means God will draw his fiery saber of vengeance and cut a swath of destruction so deep in the earth's bowels, it'll be like a wedding night with Seth Parker. 2, 3, 4. Probably the only thing worse than the coming of the false Christ is the coming of the false Christ theme park. This Six Flags over Sodom. For it was prophesied in Revelation Dave Clark 5. Why don't you take this one, Mark?
Okay. And I quote this. And the beast did appear to deceive the inhabitants of the earth, and he ordered them to build a park in honor of the beast with easy freeway access. And there he built an underground prison for mean kids who like to kick the guy in the Clarabelle cow costume. And every night there was much drinking in the parking lot. And to quote him. And that's why
the world is doomed. Because the Christian theme park industry is in jeopardy. I mean, what kid in their right mind is going to want to go to the Kentucky Creation Museum when they can ride an elephant, buy ice cream from a woman with seven breasts, and watch dead people float down the Ganges? People know Christianity is not fun. There, I said it. Now, you're probably wondering where the story fits on the End Time Indicator Index. Well, let's go to the Rapture Tote Board. Can we get a timpani, please? It's number one. Now, if we take the mean of the numeric variable by adding the values of all observations in the set, we can conclude the sin-filled world is traveling at a speed of 666 on the raptometer. This is complicated stuff, people. You need to buy my workbooks if you can't follow along. But you'd better order this hebdomadal, because supplies are running out, and Vanity Press publishers won't take any more of my checks. In the meantime, keep on fornicating, fornicators, and we'll keep the light on for you. In the ultimate karmic bondage of desires that perpetuate the absolute reality that is the self of all things.
Wow. What was that? That wasn't my voice.
Well, you're not here. I come to the studio and see a squirrel doing a perfectly... in your chair doing the same job.
You see, so there's a squirrel sitting there?
Yeah, you've been replaced by a squirrel. Sorry to tell you.
But I'm right here. I'm talking to you right now,
yeah,
Cardinal.
Right. Yeah, that's right. That's the miracle, a little thing called technology.
Yeah, no kidding. So, you know what? I don't understand. Apparently, when you were listening to the show, you thought I was in the studio. So you get in the studio, I'm not there, and you're disappointed that I'm not there. So you're doing this to take it out on me. You're making fun of my voice.
I miss you.
I know. That's what I thought. That's all I'm getting at.
You're a very warm human being, and I miss your warmth.
Oh, that's sweet. You know,
wow.
I'm gonna go bananas tonight, don't you?
That's right.
Oh,
you know,
yeah. Here we go.
You know
we're
what's gonna start this again? You know what's gonna happen while you're at Go Bananas?
What?
I'm gonna go nuts.
Get a zone. AutoZone.
AutoZone.
Do you own a car? Do you even own a car?
Yes, I do. You know who helped me get that loan for that car?
Who?
Amalgamated Bank. Bounce a few checks, no problem. We'll impound your car.
Amalgamated Bank.
Oh, is that the one downstairs with the boot on it?
Okay. Let's go. We got Martin Short coming up, you guys.
Yeah, that's going to be fun. We got Martin Short. We got a whole lot more coming up for you here on Air America Radio.
Good morning. It's Morning's Edition. I'm Mark Maron. I'm in Cincinnati. Mark Riley is there in New York. If you're listening to 1530 WCKY, the Revolution of Talk Radio, you're probably somewhere around the corner from me right now. And I can tell you I've been taught a lesson about Cincinnati, Mark Riley.
What have you been learned about Cincinnati, Mark Maron?
Well, you know, I just didn't know about what went on here. So at the beginning of our show, I sort of said that because, you know, Dan Pashman said to me, yeah, Dan Pashman, son of Lewis and Linda Pashman, our associate producer over there in New York, said to me last week before I left, or yesterday even, you got to have some spaghetti and chili and tell me how it is. So I come to Cincinnati thinking, wow, I'm going to get off the plane. There's going to be a buffet of spaghetti and chili. And I'm not a sports guy, so that's all lost to me. But I've been taught a lesson. Sherry, my host here in Cincinnati, here at the station, has brought me a big pile of swag. I've got The Hustle, which is a movie about Pete Rose, who is from here, yes. And it's Pete Rose being played by Tom Sizemore, a gambling addict played by a drug fiend. Perfect. I've got Cincinnati Baseball Heroes, The Playing Cards, which I imagine will be very exciting for Dan Pashman. I'll give it to our producer who loves baseball, but now I need to learn about that. I've got Nick Clooney, Reflections on the Screen. Nick Clooney, who was on the air here for years, who is George Clooney's dad. It's a book about the movies that changed us. And here we got, what is this? All right. This is Gary Sullivan, who has a syndicated home show. I've been given a wrench that has his name on it.
Uh-oh.
This is a channel lock wrench that I'm sure if I lose, my dad will hit me. So, I'm all set. I've got my Cincinnati swag. I guess I imagine I'm going to have to go out and find some vegetarian chili and spaghetti. And I just got an email from a guy who said he's right around the corner from where I'm staying. And that he I don't know what he wants, but he's right there. Here we go. Now we've got... Yeah, it's just like it's weird when those emails come up. It's like, I know exactly where you're staying. Cool, man. And I'm like, oh, what does that mean? Okay. No, he was just talking about he had some things to say, and I don't know what it was right now because I'm not reading it. So, look, comedian Martin Short's going to be with us in a second. You know him from Second City TV. You know him from Jiminy Glick on Comedy Central. His film, Jiminy Glick and La La Wood, opens nationwide today. Welcome to the show, Martin.
How you doing?
How are you? I'm good. Hello, Mox.
So, look, I hear that you've made this film. It's a moving portrait of a man with an eating disorder. Am I wrong?
You're completely wrong.
Oh, damn it.
No.
What is it about?
It's about, I guess, celebrity, the obsession of it, or mainly a moron with power. It could easily have been called Mr. Glick Goes to Washington.
Is that in the cards, a sequel?
Well, you know, you never know. But, I mean, it really is. Jiminy Glick happens to be an entertainment reporter, but truthfully, he is any guy that boss that you can't comprehend how he got there.
Martin Short, Jiminy Glick, the television series, from what I understand, was largely improvised. How much of the movie is?
The whole movie is improvised. We Michael Short and Paul Flaherty and I wrote a 40-page treatment, a story, and it's really just about, you know, Jiminy Glick goes to the Toronto Film Festival, meets this odd man sitting at a bar, and it turns out to be the director, David Lynch, played by myself, and then we realize that Lynch is creating his next movie, and it becomes a movie in a movie of David, a murder mystery with starring Jiminy Glick that David Lynch is creating in his head.
Oh, my God. That sounds pretty interesting. I think we're all sometimes in a David Lynch movie. We just don't know it.
Oh, absolutely. I'm in it right now.
Exactly. So how many, who else? Is there any cameos, any exciting
moments?
Oh,
there's a lot of, you know, Jan Hooks plays Jiminy's wife, Elizabeth
Oh,
Perkins.
She's hilarious.
John Michael Higgins, and then cameos by Steve Martin and Kurt Russell and Kevin Kline and Whoopi Goldberg and Susan Sarandon and Kiefer Sutherland and Forest Whitaker and Rob Lowe, and it goes on and on.
Now, when you start out talking to these people, when I see the television series, it's amazing because it really seems as if people are totally unprepared for where you go. How much of that is in the movie?
Well, it is improvised, but, you know, even you see people on the red carpet, and if you saw, you know, the stuff that we cut out, you'd see the publicist going up to, let's say, you know, Susan's friend and saying, you know, Marty Short wants to talk to you. He's doing one of his crazy, wacky characters. You don't have to talk to him. It does not help our film anyway, but if you want to, go ahead. And they do. Yeah.
So I mean, they all know you, so that must get you a lot of cash.
Yeah, well, Jimmy Glick doesn't, you know, accost people. He doesn't say, if he was talking to Clinton, he wouldn't ask him about Monica Lewinsky. He'd say, you know, why doesn't Shannon Doherty work more? You know, that's what he's interested in.
So, Martin, when you made this character, I mean, it must have been in on some level psychologically a reaction to something. What was it a reaction to in your life as a celebrity?
Well, it's not a reaction to entertainment to me. It's really the fascination of flipping around that dial or going, you know, seeing Scott McClellan at a press conference and just wondering, how did that guy get that job?
Yeah, no kidding.
How did you deliberately decide to go out and make him, like, fat and obese? And how long does it take you to get into that outfit?
You know, I was trying to create a character where I myself, my own face, would be unrecognizable. In 1991, I'd made a movie called Pure Luck, where at one point I'm stung by a bee and my face swells up. And I remember my wife saying, you know, I can't see your face in there. So I thought, good, let's do this. We'll do that look. And then there was a guy, you know, a neighbor who grew up on my street in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, who, you know, if you stayed off his lawn for a year, you didn't have to, I mean, you'd go to the movies for free. He'd send you the movies for free. And he, you know, you'd stay off my lawn, and I've just beaten it, you know. So suddenly you keep that little voice in the back of your head.
So it's a conglomeration of
exactly.
Different moments. Who were your favorite comics when you were growing up?
When I was a kid, it was probably like Jonathan Winters.
Oh, he was there.
And Nichols and May, and, you know, I liked Harpo Marx the best, and people like that, Dick Van Dyke.
Uh-huh. Jerry Lewis?
Love Jerry.
You do, Jerry, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you did a pretty devastating Jerry thing, I think, on SCTV once back in the day, huh?
I called it a love letter with Edge.
You know, I actually interviewed you years ago on a TV show. I did a sort of tribute to you. I used to host Short Attention Span Theater towards the end.
Oh, I remember.
You remember when we sat down for like a half hour and went over your career?
Absolutely.
Wasn't that exciting?
I still have a video I played every day.
I just wanted to make sure you remembered.
Hey,
so,
I'm not one of those shallow types.
No.
Who is this?
Yeah. Not like Jiminy Glick is not a shallow guy, is he?
No. He just is preoccupied with himself. One time I was interviewing Edie Falco, and she was giving an answer, and I went, shh. Just because I ask you a question does not mean that I need to hear the answer. So he's like, you know, should be in a mental institution.
Have you ever been out in a costume where that people actually don't know you're who you are?
Well, not so much now, I guess, you know, because he was on TV. But when I first did the character, I did it at the Emmy Awards, and Jack Lemmon, I remember, got up and I said, how does it feel to be a Jack Lemmon? And he kind of, no, I mean, he just done so many of these. And yeah. Kind of looked at me and said, well, I don't know. I've only ever been Jack Lemmon. I said, wonderful, off you go. And I don't think he knew whether to wave or salute, you know.
Before we go, I mean, you've done so much on television and film. How when you're out on the street, what's the role you get recognized the most for?
I don't know. It's odd because, especially when you play in late night, as often I have, you know, you make kind of a personal connection with someone. They have their personal thing that they like about you.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes the more obscure, the better.
Right.
So, you know, yes, it could be Ed Grimley or Franck or some of these characters. But
right.
Sometimes it's some, you know, a weird character you played on SCTV once, someone throws out a name and you kind of go, right, and then you spend the next couple of hours saying, what was that line from?
You don't even know which character it was. Well, thanks a lot. The film opens this Friday, right, Martin?
May 6th, Jiminy Glick and Lollywood.
Okay, it was great talking to you.
Thanks, guys.
So I just, I was, you know, while Martin Short was talking to me, I opened up this, not that I was bored, but I popped open this email
that, you know, the guy said that the guy who I was talking about is from Cincinnati said, I'm right around the corner from, you know, in the county where they did some of that suspicious vote counting, where they closed the vote count, where they were counting votes because of a terrorist threat, and they didn't allow people in there to oversee the vote counting. That's what that email was about. So thanks, Josh, for that. We will be back with Mark Riley's Dog of the Week after this, 15 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Tradition, delivering you from evil in 3 hours or less, Air America Radio.
1-800-590-9870. That's 1-800-590-9870. 1-800-590-9870.
Twenty past the hour. Good morning. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Yo.
I am in Cincinnati, Ohio, doing the show from a small pod. I'm doing the show from a pod in a Clear Channel radio mill. But anyways, Yasheri, who's my host here, also told me about Cincinnati that college basketball very hot here. Very hot. I've got me an Xavier basketball mouse pad, and I've got a Cincinnati Bearcat shirt. I'm all set. I'm going to wear this all on stage tonight to try to fit in. I'm going to try to fit in. I don't fit in anywhere, Riley. It's ridiculous. I'm here, and people are coming in. Hey, how's it going? I'm like, I'm by myself. How are you? Anyways,
hey, Maron, you what? Know you fit in Astoria, Queens, man.
Yeah, doesn't everybody?
They love you there.
It's not hard to fit in Astoria because there's people from everywhere. Here we go. Sometimes when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out just exactly what the mainstream media is saying. So luckily, we have an iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator out there. So let's crank it up and feed it some headlines. All right. From the Los Angeles Times, Blair wins, but his party loses ground. Blair wins, but his party loses ground. Translation. British people give Blair mandate to dither. Dither. That's a good word, dither. From the Washington Post, in Kansas, a sharp debate on evolution. In Kansas, a sharp debate on evolution. Translation, God takes stand, declares creationism absurd. Backward. Nothing. Hit that thing again. Progressive. How about this one? Progressive ideas attempt to walk upright, develops primitive tools. All right. Good. That forced laughter sounded better. Okay. Here we go. I'm kidding. That wasn't from Riley. I heard a little forced Kalo laughter in the back. What?
Hey.
Now I'm not making friends anywhere. They're going to throw me out of here. My regular crew is going to be like, you know what? The hell with Maron.
Lock the studio doors, kid.
Yeah. From the Indianapolis Star, runaway bride apologizes, said she was fleeing fears. Runaway bride apologizes, said she was fleeing fears. Translation, bride stalked, terrorized by maturity and integrity. All right, I'm sorry. You know what? I mean, that was funny. I don't know. What a watch.
Hey, Maron.
What? I'm wearing my Bearcats hat.
Maron, did you know that there's a story here in New York, and of course the New York Post, that says the runaway bride ran away because she wasn't getting no loving.
Yeah, I'm sure that's it. There's got to be a list of problems that woman is having. I mean, now she's got to pay some money for the search. So apparently the 600 person wedding is now down to about 240. Anyways, you know what time it is now, Riley?
Oh yeah,
Mark Riley, Dog of the Week.
That's right, Mark. And who to make this week's dog? Could it be British Prime Minister Tony Blair? His continued licking of George W. Bush's boots cost his party big in yesterday's general election, even though they won. Or how about ABC, who says it won't air an ad from the United Church of Christ because it doesn't broadcast religious messages? Gee, then how come they just aired an ad from James Dobson's Focus on the Family just the other day? But we here at Morning Sedition have high standards. Our dog this week doesn't come from commercial television. The GOP has engineered a coup at the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Its new chair, Kenneth Tomlinson, is some piece of work. He's a former editor of the vacuous Reader's Digest, and now he's begun the process of eviscerating public TV for his master, none other than G.W. Bush. Mm. It's no secret conservatives have wanted to gut the CPB for some time. It was barely a decade ago that Newt Gingrich and his cronies tried in vain to defund it. Now, Tomlinson has planted a virus from inside, hoping that will work. He's hired a former Bush White House flack to help oversee the content of public TV and radio. This, of course, to pump up the discredited myth of blunting the liberal media. Tomlinson has stacked the CPB's top brass with all manner of Republican toadies. Make no mistake about their ultimate goal here. They want to destroy public radio and TV as we now know it. As their point man, Kenneth Tomlinson is a most deserving Morning Sedition Dog of the Week.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's a good one, Riley.
Hey, man.
Wow, man, we got some good guests coming next week. Ariana Huffington's going to be on our show. Do you know that?
Oh, yeah, man. You know, this is a, we got Eli Wallach, too.
Eli Wallach. That guy was in all the old Clint Eastwood movies. He was one of the, he was in the group theater, I think. He's an old... Yeah! That's him.
You remember him keeling over and dying in the third Godfather movie? That was the only death that I really would like to watch.
Yeah, aside from the movie itself, what a piece of crap that was.
Yeah, it was. But
the third guy, why the hell did he even make that? Oh,
I don't
God.
Know, but his dying after eating those cream cakes was just classic.
Yeah, he's one of the great dyers. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he's coming in studio, too, so you can tell him how much you hated Godfather 3 to his face.
Oh, I'm sure he doesn't care. He's like, hey, look, a paycheck's a paycheck, and then he'll die, probably. That'd be a horrible thing.
Byron, a horrible thing.
Not to really die, but maybe if we asked him, I wonder if actors would do that. I've never seen anyone do that. It's like, come on, do the die thing. Die like you did it. Because God knows death on radio is so engaging.
Oh, yeah.
Did you hear the first 3 months of our show? Anyway, how are you, folks?
Oh.
Here we go.
I guess them chili and pasta fumes must have gotten to your head finally.
Dude, I'm rebelling here. Look, man, they're leaving me in this studio. There's no one watching over me. I've taken my pants off. I got my Cincinnati Bearcats hat on.
You're doing a passman, huh?
Well, now I'm opening the wrench, and I'm not sure what I'm going to do with that.
Oh, my God. Oh, by the way, you know, yeah. The Air America Jim Earls played their second game yesterday.
Yeah, I saw it on C-SPAN or ESPN.
ESPN.
ESPN 9 carries it.
Sports Center coming up next. Brendan, were you there?
There. Am I on mic here?
I
was there. We actually lost again, Marin.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
But it was an uplifting loss. We did a little bit better.
Yeah. Was Cashman excited? Was he yelling at people?
He was yelling just in vague directions, not at anyone in particular.
And then he started making Holocaust jokes.
Oh, what does that even mean? I guess we'll have to wait to find out.
Absolutely. We'll be back. We got clip notes and more when we come back here on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Good comes of that. And that's what is happening now. It is disgusting.
Jerry Springer on Air America Radio.
Next year, HarperCollins will proudly publish The Diary of Ronald Reagan. Morning Sedition has obtained these exclusive entries from the pen of the nation's 40th president.
July 25th, 1984. Everyone's making fun of Ron Jr. being a ballet dancer. Sure, he's wispy and frail and womanish, but what they don't know is I found him having Congress with a playboy in the washroom. And more than once. Sure, he was tucking his equipment between his thighs, holding giant feathers aloft and shrieking, I'm a beautiful swan, but... Ooh, okie dokie. He's on his own now, just like Patty. Uh-oh, Mommy's coming.
This has been another excerpt from The Diary of Ronald Reagan, brought to you by Morning Sedition.
34 past the hour, Mark Maron here in Cincinnati with Mark Riley there in New York.
Hey!
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. I'm sitting in a small studio by myself wearing nothing but a Cincinnati Bearcats hat, and I'm holding a wrench, and there in the corner, above my head is a solitary TV, and Imus is on it with no sound. Literally, it's like Big Brother is watching me. I turn around, and there's Imus. What is that? Look at him there. Anyway, so did you hear about this, Riley? The U.S. military released on last week
that it believes that they found a letter that believes it was addressed to a terrorist mastermind, Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, from an underling, apparently, complaining that incompetence of leaders in al-Qaeda is hurting morale among his fighters. You're not going to believe this. Some guy just emailed me the letter from the Cincinnati area. I don't know how it got here, but I got a copy of it. You want to hear it?
Run it.
Okay. Dear Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, I'm sure you have lots of important plotting and jihading to do, but I didn't know who else to turn to. Where to begin? I have so many issues. My followers just don't have their hearts in their work anymore. It's like we get together to build a car bomb, right? And when we finish, I ask for volunteers to martyr themselves, and suddenly everyone's just staring at their sandals. 2 years ago, they couldn't wait to get to paradise. Now it's like I'm the bad guy just for asking. I feel like I'm meeting a bunch of rainy day terrorists. And then there's a lot of missed communications. I realize we're in a secret terrorist organization here, but a few forwarded emails sure would make my job easier. It's like one hand doesn't know what the other hand is blowing up. As for me, I'm still 100% behind the jihad and trying to stay positive. As it says on the poster you sent us, an opportunity is never lost. It's just found by someone else. Anywho, thanks for letting me bend your ear. If you've got any new videos, please send them along. They really help keep us stoked. It's like you always say, you can't spell suicide mission without you. Yours in Allah, Ali.
Ooh.
Oh, now I got the Mark Riley.
Ooh.
Ooh, I don't know about that.
Amen.
That's on the line. Look at this, Pamela Anderson. Did you see this? Pamela Anderson is now standing up. She calls for a Kentucky Fried Chicken boycott. And I got to be honest with you. I have to be honest with you. She says, Pamela Anderson says the fast food chain mistreats the chickens they slaughter. The actress is, of course, referring to the practice of sending the chickens before processing to pool parties at Tommy Lee's house. But anyways, is that wrong? I don't know. Is it wrong? I have a hard time knowing what's
no
wrong.
Good. You're going straight to Cincinnati Hill, not ordinary Hill.
I'm here with my hat. Anyways, the interesting thing is that part of what she's talking about, we've had this talk before, it was in a different context, but we angered some vegans, you know, when I trivialized the plight of chickens in their in these processing facilities. And I got to be honest with you, Riley, part of the reason why I got off of the stuff, why I got off of the meat, was because of pictures that some vegetarian person sent me of animal treatment. I don't know how long I'm going to stay off the meat, but I'll tell you, it had something to do with it. But I don't know what, what am I left with? You should have seen me last night, Riley. It was sad. I'm in my little sweet hotel, and it's one of those hotels where they make around 6 o'clock, they make hot cookies.
Oh, yeah.
So the woman, I'm sitting there using the computer while the woman who runs the place is making the hot cookies, so I eat four, right? And then they got a little basket of miniature candy bars. So I, like, while she's not looking, I take like 9 and a Reese's. And I buy some M&Ms, and I go back to my room, and I proceed to eat all of it. And I'm sitting there in my room surrounded by candy wrappers, just wondering what the hell happened to me. It used to be there'd be a room full of people, there'd be some booze and some drugs. Now I'm like sitting there by myself with candy wrappers, and I still can't sleep. My heart's pounding. I don't even have the luxury of being on good drugs.
But you know what, Maron? I bet you you're a happier man today because you're clean and sober. No matter how alone you are, no matter how many candy bars you eat, it was better than the coke and booze-filled and booze-fueled parties that you used to have when you were on the road back in the day.
All right, maybe you're right, but I feel fat, Riley.
Is this Lawton Small?
Feel a little fat, man.
No, don't worry about it, man.
I'll be all right.
Don't they have a gym in the All Suite Hotel?
Oh, yeah, that's going to happen today. That's going to happen. So what is this? What is this other story about the FBI? What happened? They something screwed up and they let a serial killer go?
Yeah, man. I mean, look, I don't know how. On the one hand, they got people on terror watch lists getting invited to the White House. On the other hand, the FBI says that a glitch in its database let a guy go who was suspected of sexual assault, and now he's charged with killing 2 other people after they cut him loose.
Wow.
His name is Jeremy Brian Jones, and apparently this was one of those alias kinds of things. He was released on a trespassing charge in January of last year. Now he's been charged with a third killing, and apparently, you know, the FBI says, of course, you know, we regret the incident. He was using an alias when he was arrested on trespassing charges in Carroll County, Georgia. The local cops sent his fingerprints to the FBI, but the Bureau's computer failed to match them. And he was wanted since 2000 in Oklahoma on a sexual assault charge.
Since 2000?
Yes, since 2000. The FBI says it was a database error for the fingerprint mistake, saying it was not a case of an examiner failing to make an appropriate match. Apparently, the computer did it.
Hey, you know what? Maybe, I wonder if this ties into what we were talking about before, about beating your kids, about people who hit their kids to punish them. Remember, you were talking about how if you get hit, it makes you try to hide your behavior more.
Yeah.
Well, maybe I wonder if this guy got the hell beat out of him, and that's why he got was able to elude capture for so long. I'm not so hip to this beating the kids thing that James Dobson, the Christo fascist zombie brigade leader of the parents. What is it? What's his? What the
focus
family.
On the family.
Focus on family. Yeah, I'm not so hip to it. I think it's bad because it makes mean adults.
Well, it makes mean adults. And see, the other thing, Mark, is that different kids react in different ways to being hit. Some kids will cry and then, they'll emote or whatever. Some kids will just, stand there and say, well, go ahead, keep going if you want.
Actually, here's another report, too, that apparently an FBI spokesman in relation to this thing said that the Bureau was incompetent. The FBI spokesman denied the Bureau was incompetent and blamed the foul-up on the fact that they have so many agents working on the Unabomber case.
What?
Yeah, oh, yeah. See, that's the thing is that, a lot of people just, they're not up to speed over there, apparently.
Did they have some FBI guys at your old parties back in the day or something? Because that makes absolutely no sense whatsoever.
That's because
the Unabomber case.
It was a joke, man.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
I see, sometimes I'm so smooth that they come out not funny. That's how good I am, right?
Hey, Jim Earl thought you were here for a half hour, right?
That's how good I am. I can tell a joke and not get any laughs. I mean, that's genius. A lot of guys, they deliver the joke, they get a laugh. I can deliver one, it sounds so true, it goes right by. How great is that?
Well, it went right over my gray head.
It's all right, buddy. So what do we got? I'm still sort of baffled and amazed that we have Arianna Huffington coming next week because I've always wanted to talk to her.
Yeah, well, she's got this new celebrity blog thing I think she's trying to do.
Yeah, she's trying to get everybody. It's unbelievable how people want to get on board when all of a sudden they have something to pitch. Apparently it's some big communal sort of thing. She's trying to give an outlet to liberal and democratic voices and reaching out to celebrities. That's all we need is, Frasier, sitting down saying, oh, boy, I think I need to say some stuff. Yeah, it's high time we hear some of the inner thoughts of Bob De Niro. You know what I mean? It's good. It's going to really bring up the level of political discourse. Listen to me. I'm an ass. Yeah, apparently she's got Walter Cronkite on there. He's been pitching in a little bit. A lot of people that want to write, smart people, progressive people, will now have an outlet to do that people will actually read. Apparently.
They didn't have an outlet before.
Is she going to give you a blog then, man?
Dude, I don't know where people get this kind of time. Maybe if I was more like, what's his name, Steven Johnson, the guy who wrote this book. The Everything Bad is Good for You, how today's pop culture is actually making us smarter. Apparently there's a lot of people out there. Brendan P.W. McDonald is included in this. There's some guys that just get a lot done, and they do a lot of things and everything. I don't know where the hell they got the time. I swear, by the time I'm done with this, I just don't think I pace myself properly. You know what I mean? Because if I make two phone calls, in a day, and that's it. That's it, really. That's done.
And that's a good day.
That's a good day. Forward, maybe respond to, 90 emails.
Oh,
my
God.
Like 2,000 a day.
Like, hey, Marvin, I got a question for you. You got a refrigerator in the suite, right?
Yeah.
What do you got in there?
What do you mean? I've been here 10 minutes. What do I got? I got a turkey. I got an entire rack of lamb. I'm thinking about having a big meat relapse.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't know how it got in there either. But that's okay just to eat a turkey if it's in the fridge when you get there, isn't it?
I guess.
Yeah, right, buddy.
Yeah.
So what are we going to do? When we come back, we've got a few things. We've got the Cliff Notes coming up.
Yep. And, there's another very bizarre story, Mark. This is bizarre even by New York standards.
Okay.
We'll give you a little taste of that.
Give me a taste, man.
Yeah, man, because this is a taste, and it's a very bizarre one.
What do you got?
It's about some doctors who allegedly gave Viagra to the mob.
I didn't know the mob had that kind of trouble.
Well, apparently they got it more. You know, Paul Castellano did. Paul Castellano apparently was, had some kind of impotence problems because he was.
How do you even know that?
That's a big story.
Paul Castellano was the head of the Gambino crime family in the 70s?
He was the one that was gunned down in front of Sparks Steakhouse in 1985.
Was he Bonanno or was he Gambino?
I believe he was Gambino.
All right, that's right. He was gunned down, and apparently. It might have been a relief to him if what you're saying is true.
Well, you know, he was doing his maid, and apparently the maid, in interviewed after his death, said he had a little bit of a problem.
Wow. Yeah. Could you imagine that? She's getting her revenge, right? Big mob. This is getting, I don't like talking about the mob because, Kalo lives in Staten Island.
There you go. There is no mafia.
There you go.
They're paid to say that. When you're from Staten Island, if you don't say that, you're going to get hit.
Dude, it's true. There is no such thing. It's an imagination made by Hollywood. It's a story.
Oh,
it's
my
not
God.
True.
This is weird. This is like Kalo's version of Christianity, of being sort of right-wing. Not right-wing, but you're brainwashed, dude. Where'd you get that?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Marky Luciano was in the import-export business. Just got a check.
Yeah, that's what I hear. Yeah, and The Godfather is just based on nothing.
It's a guy's story. Mario Puzo, whatever his name is.
What, he just made it up?
Yes, of course. It's a novel.
There's no mob.
It's a novel.
The Sopranos, nothing. That's like a comic
fiction.
Book.
Tony Soprano is just a character.
Okay, what about Albert Anastasia? What about Carlos Gambino? What about this guy?
They had problems, but there was no organized syndicate of people. They just happened to be Italian. There is no mafia.
Okay, I'm going to go with it because I don't want to get hurt.
Yeah, well, who built Vegas? The Harlem Globetrotters?
Yeah, listen to Riley. Who built that?
Independent contractors.
Oh, okay.
I don't understand.
What
independent
kind of contractors?
Right, independent contractors supported by contractors.
Halliburton, too.
All right,
Enron built Vegas. I got it.
Halliburton Lansky. 47 past the hour. Air America Radio will be back in a second.
Morning's Edition.
Just wake up.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about those people.
On Air America Radio.
Thanks.
See if you qualify to dramatically reduce your tax debt. Call 800-661-0491 right now. That's 800-661-0491. Call right now.
Past the hour, let's land this thing. It's Mark Maron here on Morning Sedition. I'm in Cincinnati. Mark Riley is there in New York City. I will be.
He can't really talk right now. He has a mouthful of fruit from City Bakery.
Oh, you guys got the City Bakery stuff?
Yeah, dude, we got like twice as much City Bakery stuff because they didn't send it last time. So there's like tons of food. Yo, you're pissing the lychee nuts.
Come on, man. Come on. I can't believe I'm not there. I almost like lost my. I can't believe I'm not there.
Is that a ham and cheese omelet?
A ham and cheese omelet. They did not send omelets.
Mango.
Bashman, they did not send omelets. They did not send omelets.
You'll never know.
Come on, dude. I am here in Cincinnati. I'll be at Go Bananas tonight. We're having a great time here on the Revolution of Talk Radio, and you guys are eating. I'm sitting here. I got nothing over here. Well, let's take a call. Let's take this Ted in Nebraska.
Hi, Mark and Mark. I can't believe you're defending PBS. It's the most biased.
Oh, no, it's happening. Oh, no, I hate when... help me, Riley. Oh, my God. Oh, no, it's happening. My thoughts are starting to change. I'm becoming him. Oh, no.
From Radio Halliburton, it's right and early, the conservative's way to wake up with Mark the Shark Maron.
Good morning, neocons. It's 34 past the hour here on Radio Halliburton. It's vengeance with volume. So the little neocons are going after PBS. Yeah, it's about time we cleaned out Mr. Rogers' elitist neighborhood.
Game over.
Oh, no, I'm going to... Yeah, there's a pledge for you, PBS. All over your tote bag.
Those liberals think they could take my tax dollars and waste it on Antiques Roadshow. Here's Mark the Shark watching PBS.
Boring.
Boring. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I just had a terrible nightmare. I was being molested by Teletubbies. Hello, I'm a PBS subscriber, and I hate the president. I have a master's degree. I like Joseph Campbell. My penis fell off. PBS, your days of suckling at the public teat are over. Take that, Arthur Vinning Davis Foundation. Take that, John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation. Take that, viewers like you. Yeah, hey, it's 36 past the hour. Let's take a call. You're on the air, caller.
Oh, those damn liberals, feminazis, tax and spend.
Oh, you're right you are, caller. Lindy England is a hero. So she put a guy on a leash. On a show, she put a leash on a guy and let him around. I mean, who hasn't done that? What? Come on, she's hot. Admit it. You'd do it. You know you would. Come on. Oh, thank you, Lindy. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. One more, baby. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've been shark, and I love it. Hey, it's 38 after the hour. Time for the Neocon Traffic Report. Out on the information highway, the left lane is now closed. Hey, PBS, you might want to seek an alternate route. Yeah, that's right. Stick around, Neocons. We'll be back with Toby Keith.
Don't touch that dial, Patriot. We'll be back with Right and Early.
Well, what happened? Sherry just came in here and I was laying on the floor. Yeah. What happened? Mm-hmm. Did I have the? What are you eating, man?
Mm.
How much of it? Oh, how much did they really bring?
Just call me Mango Breath.
Mangoes? Oh man, what else? What else did
they? I got everything, man. Everything.
Lychee nuts. We got cranberries. We got pineapple.
Eggs, quarantine. You name it.
No, you don't get eggs quarantine.
Yeah,
there's no eggs. No, they did not send eggs.
They sent eggs.
Yeah, oh, man, they sent eggs, man.
Like and the good kind.
Yeah.
Egg whites. Is there a guy with a chef's hat sitting there with a rolling cart doing a flambé thing? Come on. You got an omelet maker right in the room. You're lying. You're pulling my chain.
You'll never know.
They actually brought a guy to make the omelet.
Yeah.
Oh, come on.
He has like a big chef hat.
Come on.
Yeah.
Here we go. Are you ready for this? For those of you who are just tuning in and didn't get to hear the whole show, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. Tony Blair wins historic third term as prime minister. Blair says he will not seek a fourth term, saying he would like to explore kissing Bush's ass in the private sector. Republicans attempt takeover of PBS, and the new head, Kenneth Tomlinson, was a former Reader's Digest editor, so you can expect PBS to carry the same edge and depth as Digest stories like Grandpa was nice, Red Barns are pretty, and kitty cats are fun. FBI apologizes for glitch that released suspected serial killer. They were apparently thrown off by the criminal's clever alias, which was, I am not the serial killer you are looking for. Asked if they had learned anything from this incident, one FBI officer said, absolutely. When the computer asked, do you want to save the file marked serial rapists and murderers, click the box that says, yes. Pam Anderson calls for a KFC boycott. Miss Anderson said she sympathized with the chickens because their breasts were pumped full of chemicals to satisfy a ravenous public. Pam narrates a 5-minute video for PETA that documents apparent mistreatment of KFC chickens, but if you push the slow button, you can make it last a good 20 minutes or so. So next week, we got Eli Wallach, Ariana Huffington,
and much, much
And I'm at Go Bananas tonight, 1530 WCKY. Thank you for having me.
All right, have a good weekend. See you Monday, Marin.